By the wind and fire. Nirdad yamanam. Being burned. Tan. Then the trees. Upalabhya. Seen. Kuru dwaha. O Maharaja Pariksit. Raja. The king of the forest. Uvacha. Said. Mahan. The great. Somaha. Predominating deity of the moon. Somadeva. Manyum. The anger. Prashamayam. Pacifying. Eva. Like. So translation, my dear King Parikshit, when Soma, the king of the trees and predominating deity of the moon, saw the fire and wind burning all the trees to ashes, he felt great sympathy because he is the maintainer of all herbs and trees. To appease the anger of the Prachetas, Soma spoke as follows. So you can repeat, my dear King Parikshit.
My dear King Parikshit.
When Soma, the king of the trees,
and predominating deity of the moon,
saw the fire and wind,
burning all the trees to ashes,
he felt great sympathy, because he is the maintainer of all herbs and trees. To appease the anger of the Prachetas, Soma spoke as follows. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. It is understood from this verse that the predominating deity of the moon is the maintainer of all the trees and plants throughout the universe. It is due to the moonshine that trees and plants grow very luxuriantly. Therefore, how can we accept the so-called scientists whose moon expeditions have informed us that there are no trees or vegetation on the moon? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Somo riksha dishtata saiva rikshanam raja. Soma, the predominating deity of the moon, is the king of all vegetation. How can we believe that the maintainer of vegetation has no vegetation on his own planet? Interesting. Let me just read the next two verses and then we'll comment. So, text, because these have very short purports to the next two verses. Text 7. Nadrumebhyo mahabhaga jinebhyo drogdamarhata vivardayishyo yuyang vajanam patayasmitaha. O greatly fortunate ones, you should not kill these poor trees by burning them to ashes. Your duty is to wish the citizens, prajas, all prosperity, and to act as their protectors. So, Prabhupada explains, it is indicated herein that the government or king has the duty of protecting not only the human beings, but all other living entities, including animals, trees, and plants. No living entity should be killed unnecessarily. And finally, text 8. Oho prajapati patir Bhagavan harhir avyaya vanaspatin oshadishcha sasarajorjam isham vibhu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Hari, is the master of all living entities, including all the Prajapatis, such as Lord Brahma, because he is the all-pervading and indestructible master. He has created all these trees and vegetables as eatables for other living entities. So, Srila Prabhupada explains that Soma, the predominating deity of the moon, reminded the Prachetas that this vegetation had been created by the Lord of Lords to provide food for everyone. If the Prachetas tried to kill them off, their own subjects would also suffer, for trees are also required for food. Om Gana Timidandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Vilikam Yenatasmai Shikadaveda Maha. So there's several points here in these verses and purports. First one, I'll just deal with what Prabhupada said. Basically about, this is actually from the Bhagavad Gita, where the moon supplies the juice of life to the vegetables. And nowadays, of course, people grow things without the moon. There's this process called hydroponics. It's an interesting process, where they grow things without the moon or without soil, and they just add these different chemicals into the water, which circulates in some tubes in the root systems throughout the different plants. And anyone who's taken hydroponic vegetables, and I'm sure we have, because that's what's generally available in many cases during the winter, knows that they don't have much taste. And the scientists, they breed these different fruits and vegetables to have a very nice shape, but they're not so much concerned with the taste per se, because they're concerned with people buying in the supermarket. You know, people buy in the supermarket according to the sight. You know, all the tomatoes have to look exactly the same, all the carrots have to look exactly the same. And even what they do, nowadays one of the main cheating things, they sell these baby carrots in the supermarket. And the baby carrots are actually not baby carrots. The baby carrots are actually the big carrots that looked a little strange. They're good carrots, but they looked a little strange. You know, they were crooked. You know, they looked like the witch's nose or something like that, and the Wizard of Oz or something. And they just cut them down. They put them through this machine and cuts them down and makes them look like little baby carrots, but they're not actually baby carrots. So there's so much cheating. And then people are becoming malnourished by eating all these vegetables. The vegetables don't have the same nourishment, vitamins, and minerals that they used to have. And not only are they not doing it with the moonshine, they're not utilizing the moonshine in general, but they're feeding the plants things that are not actually meant to be fed to plants. I mean, they have turned the plants into basically non-vegetarians. Because one of the types of food, I mean, if you buy this Miracle-Gro, you know, Miracle-Gro, you've heard of it before? If you work in Home Depot, you know what I'm talking about. Miracle-Gro, it actually has fish parts in it. So you're actually feeding plants fish. They're actually they even turn the cows into meat eaters. They take the bones and other things, other parts of animals, and just like churn them and grind them up and feed them to the cows. And of course, as a result of that, there was this mad cow disease. And people were getting this mad cow disease. Their brains were developing like holes in them. Already they have no brains in Kali Yuga. But then you have more holes in the brains. And they actually, dermatosa. In other words, bad brains, or Prabhupada said, cow stool brains, you know, basically. Gober brains. Anyway, so this is the problem, that not understanding where the nutrition comes from. The moonshine, or the sunshine, proper soil, and of course the fertilizer, the right fertilizer is the cow manure. And of course, in the Vedic system, tradition, they would actually be growing things along the banks of the rivers. So the rivers would regularly flood, and the silt, just like in Mayapur, the Ganges regularly floods, and the silt left from the flooding actually fertilizes the land. That's why the land is considered the most fertile along the river banks, because of the flooding. The flooding is not actually a bad thing. It happens in a periodic fashion. And in India, you see, still to a certain extent, they actually have seasons where it rains. Of course, that's changing now due to the influence of Kali Yuga. So that specific seasons it would rain, and specific seasons it wouldn't rain. And now it's changing. Of course, now they're having the rain actually starts earlier. The monsoon season sometimes starts earlier or doesn't occur due to the influence of Kali Yuga. But originally, when people were more pious, not only in India but around the world, the vegetables tasted better and things grew, and even the gems came to the surface. You know, the jewels and gems came to the surface because the earth, naturally being a devotee of the Lord, just like Soma is a devotee of the Lord, the earth is a devotee of the Lord, and when the earth is satisfied, with people on it, then the earth produces abundantly. And when the earth is not satisfied, certainly the earth is not satisfied because the personification of the earth is a cow. Cows have been exploited in record numbers, especially in India. India is actually the largest exporter of leather in the world. And so your earth is getting very upset. You're getting more deserts. Just like you see the Rajasthani desert, which comes from Rajasthan, which we have a resident of Rajasthan here, is expanding more and more and actually engulfing Vrindavan, Braj, right now because of the impious activities of people, and also because people are doing things like tearing down the forests, because the forests prevent erosion, and the forest actually, there's a lot of good things with the trees. Not only do the trees look pretty, or they give fruits, the good, or they give shade, but the trees prevent this desertification. In other words, they prevent an area from becoming a desert, because the trees take the water, but naturally they preserve the water in the soil too. And then the water, of course, goes up into the clouds and then comes down again. And so when you deforest an area, it naturally becomes a desert. And you're seeing that also in Brazil, where they're burning down major portions of the Brazilian rainforest. And there's one company in particular that's responsible for that. It's Old Blank Donald's. Anyway, McDonald's is responsible for that, and all these hamburger places, because it takes so many acres of land to produce a unit of meat protein. I mean, they just have to keep burning down acre after acres of the forest land, and the whole world will gradually become desert by doing that. And at the same time, they're doing this global warming thing. You know, they're exploiting the earth, not only by burning down the trees, they're fracking. I don't know if any of you know what fracking is. In order to extract oil, they're injecting things into the soil, into the earth, into the rocks of the earth. You know, just raping the Mother Earth. Prabhupada actually said that that Hiranyaksha was actually one of the predecessors in the oil drilling regime, and it disturbs when you take oil out of the earth. I mean, just like if you take not oil out of your body, but if you take blood out of your body, it disturbs your whole function. I don't know if you've ever experienced when they take a lot of blood out, but you get very dizzy. So the oil and the water and all the liquids in the earth are actually part of the circulatory system of the earth. So when they take that out, it disturbs the circulation of the earth, and that's one of the reasons the earth fell down into the Garbhodak Ocean. So in other words, people are just not acting properly in many different ways. Not only are they not exposing the vegetables to the moonshine. So that's one point. Another point is a little bit more controversial. That's about going to the moon. You know, I didn't really want to talk about it, but we have to because Prabhupada mentions it here. So there's different things that Prabhupada said, you know. First of all, he said he thought that they went to the desert, you know, like in New Mexico. And another thing he said is that they were comparing it to the desert. And Prabhupada said, it's like a man saying they're not cheating, you know. He said, oh, it's just like the desert. So, and other times Prabhupada said, even if they did go to the moon, you know, what did they accomplish? And actually recently there was one, I think it was in Europe, one senator, many, many years ago, when the scientists or the astronauts supposedly went to the moon, they gave a moon rock to some government official or some museum in Europe, and then they tested this moon rock and they found out it wasn't actually from another planet. It was actually from the Earth planet somewhere. They actually did an analysis of it, you know, microscopic analysis of it. So the question is, did they actually go to the moon? And we also have to be careful, like going around and telling people, you know, just declaring it boldly, that at the university, going to University of North Carolina Christian West program, saying they didn't go to the moon, that. And also we have to be careful where we say that and how we understand that. We don't want to get into cahoots with all these, paranoid people on the internet who have all these different theories that, the 9/11 theory was actually the CIA who bombed the Twin Towers. I mean, I've seen devotees get into all these things, like super paranoia, conspiracy theories. It's a big conspiracy. Well, I got news for you. The government is not capable of keeping secrets if there's a conspiracy. I mean, you see all the different controversy with that Snowden recently and the NSA. Of course, you can say, some people in the conspiracy theory say that Snowden was a plant by the government. He was paid to do what he did. Anyway, so, if you go on the internet, YouTube, you hear about all these different conspiracy theories, 9/11, actually America was behind Hitler. So many crazy things. America was the one who bombed Pearl Harbor. And you get into all these things, and it's also the Masons are behind everything. The Freemasons, you've heard about these things before? The Freemasons, another people say it's all the Jewish people, the Kohenims are behind everything. So there's all these, amazing conspiracy theories that, people are just paranoid get into. So the question is, the point is we don't really want to talk about, this not going to moon that so much, But how do we understand it? Because there is some evidence that there's something on the moon that the scientists put. Well, the way we understand it is the moon is a heavenly planet. They can go to some location where, let us say the manifestation, some grosser manifestation of the moon is. But the actual real manifestation of the moon is in a very subtle form, much more subtle, because the heavenly planets are subtle. They don't walk around with gross bodies of bile, mucus, and air in the heavenly planets. You never hear, like an injured locust, someone say, you have bad breath. Just like there was an advertisement many years ago where people have bad breath, they would get a present of, what is it, mouthwash? Listerine. They would get a present of Listerine, wrapped up, with a little bow on it. It's a TV advertisement. So in the heavenly planets, there's none of that going on. It's not that, just someone has digestive problems, bad breath, overweight. I mean, none of these things occur there in the heavenly planets because they don't have gross bodies, bio, mucus, and air. Their bodies are more subtle. In fact, when they come down to the Earth planet, they don't touch the ground. They just don't touch the ground. So there's stories in the Mahabharata about that. There's one lady who was having her Swayamvara, Savitri. Savitri was having her Swayamvara, and she wanted to marry Satyavan. You know that story? Savitri, Satyavan, or whatever. And the demigods, they liked her too, so they came down. They were very interested in seeing her. So she was able to identify who Satyavan was because he was the guy who was sweating and touching the ground. Even the demigods actually took his form. They looked like him. So if you see someone who doesn't sweat, doesn't touch the ground, and somehow or other you're able to see him, that may be a demigod. Of course, Yudhisthira didn't touch the ground until he disobeyed Krishna's instruction. And he didn't lie when he was supposed to lie, but actually lied in a way that was indirect. So anyway. So the point is, the moon is far more subtle, so people can't go there. You have to enter into the atmosphere. You have to have the proper eyes to see. You cannot see the moon. You cannot see the subtle vegetation on the moon. They can go to some geographical location where they see evidence of the subtle, subtlety, but they can't enter into the subtlety. So that's one way of understanding it. But anyway, we're not going to get too much into this whole discussion. But in any case, it's not something that we should go around just telling people that they have not gone to the moon, because it's going to make us look crazy. It's not really good for Krishna West. And people are going to think, look at that cult, you know. Next thing they're going to be telling us is Judgment Day is coming tomorrow. You know, like the millenarian cults of the Christians, they have these millenarian cults. You've heard about that before? They say Judgment Day is coming. I mean, even ISKCON got into it in the year 2000. People were thinking, you know, the world's coming to an end because the computers are coming to an end. Or, you know, the computers wouldn't be able to calculate 2001. And nothing really happened. Anyway, so apart from that particular issue, let's talk about the Prachetas here. Of course, the Prachetas, they were pretty angry. I mean, if you had to perform austerities in the water and not eat for a long time, you'd probably be pretty angry too. So, but if they were pure, we mentioned this before, if someone is a pure devotee and doing devotional austerities, then you get blissful, you don't get angry. That's actually a standard by which you can tell whether you're pleasing Krishna or not, by your austerities. If you're getting angry because, let's say of course it's Kadashi today. So it's Nirjala, Pandava Nirjala Kadashi. Let's say you decide to fast the whole day at the end, and by midday you're ready just like to tear someone's head off. That means you're probably not doing it right, or you're not having the right consciousness like that. I remember people who used to fast from water and not sleep and everything, but just by looking at the internet all day long. Okay. You know, and they were invested in the stock market, they were watching the ticker tape go by, you know. And so that's not really the process. So if one is going to execute austerity, particularly on this particular day, then they have to do it with a mood of devotion to Krishna, to please Krishna, and also be absorbed in something that does please Krishna. It's not simply fasting is going to get you back to Godhead. I mean, sometimes you hear all these stories from the Puranas that, I mean, for example, you have this story about Nrisimha Chaturdasi, that Prahlad Maharaj, and we don't know if it's a bona fide story, because actually the Puranas have been changed dramatically, and as well as the Mahabharata. You hear this story that Prahlad Maharaj was with his girlfriend in his previous life. I don't know if you ever heard this story. And somehow or other he was arguing with her, had a violent argument with her. And he just, like when you argue with your girlfriend or wife, you don't want to eat, you don't want to sleep. I mean, you just thought, like steam is coming out of your head. And so because of that, he stayed up all night in Nrisimha Chaturdasi without eating or sleeping. Therefore, next life he became Prahlad Maharaj. I mean, you have a story there. But, you know, Prabhupada never told that story. And did any of our acharyas ever tell that story? I mean, that's a question. Because you have these stories that are sometimes encourage this karmakanja type of understanding, that if you do something, if you fast by accident. I mean, for example, we have people in the hospital who are definitely fasting all Ekadasi. I don't think they will go back to Godhead just by fasting on Ekadasi, unless they're chanting Hare Krishna, hearing the holy names. So there has to be a devotional aspect to the performance of austerities. It has to be something that's pleasing to Krishna rather than just a negation. So with Ekadasi, it's not just a negation. It's positive. You chant more, you hear more, you engage in Krishna's service. It's not that you just give up looking at CNN for that particular day or watching Spider-Man movies on Ekadasi. You know, you have to add something. Like Prabhupada said, if your cup is full of milk, there's no room for ink. So that's how you fill your cup with Krishna Katha on Ekadasi. Okay, so anyway, so as far as the Prachetas, there was something that wasn't quite right with their austerities, because they were getting angry. And they were getting angry in such a way that it wasn't productive. I mean, anger is not necessarily a bad thing. Anger is required if you're fighting for Dharma and the battle of Kurukshetra. I mean, it's not that the Pandavas, when they were fighting, The Kurus, they were just like peace and love, like some hippies in the 1960s, you know, flower children. They were angry. Bhimsen, he had taken a vow to kill all the Kurus, I mean all 100 of them. And even when other Pandavas had the opportunity to kill one of the Kurus, one of the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, they said, no, no, it's Bhimsen's quota. So, I mean, that anger was actually appropriate. So there's appropriate anger. Anger is not necessarily bad. When it's used in Krishna's service in the appropriate time. But if it doesn't accomplish Krishna's, it doesn't put forward Krishna's service, it's inappropriate. If it, you have to think of strategy. That's why anger has to be applied with intelligence, not uncontrolled anger. Intelligence means, is this pleasing to Krishna or is it not? Is it productive or is it not? So the Prachetas, they actually certainly didn't do that beforehand. They didn't consider the results of their anger. I mean, they might have been able to justify it. Yes, we have to clear the land because the trees have just taken over all the land. But first of all, it wasn't the trees' fault. Because trees just grow. It's not, you know, sometimes when you get angry, you actually project a particular mentality upon the object of your anger. It's like you're driving a car, someone cuts you off, you think, oh, he was acting in a mean way. No, he was probably just spaced out. So you project that. So the Prachetas were actually getting angry at the trees, and there was some indication they thought the trees had done this deliberately, filled the land deliberately out of some animosity towards human beings or something. But it wasn't that. The trees were just doing their business, you know, seeds coming out, new trees growing, water coming down, trees growing. Hare Krishna. And for them to burn down all the trees, even though there was, you could say it was their dharma to clear the land, right? But they didn't consider the consequences. This is also another thing about ethics we wanted to bring in. I've been studying about ethics recently. Consequentialism. It's interesting. There's different ethical theories, different types of consequentialism too. I'm not going to get into all the philosophical details about it. But really when you do some action, it's not only that, you know, it's Vedic, like clearing land is Vedic. But you have to understand what are the consequences of doing that. Like, for example, telling the truth is Vedic. But the consequences sometimes of telling the truth can be a violation of Dharma. For example, you know, I've given the example many times before. If someone's coming, and this example is in the Mahabharata. If someone's coming to attack a family, you know, some dacoit is coming to attack a family, and they run into your house or run into your temple or your ashram, whatever, and the dacoit, for a shelter, and the dacoits come to your door and they say, you know, where is this family we're looking for? You know, they cheated us in a business deal, whatever. And you say, I cannot tell a lie. And you studied Pinocchio. You heard of Pinocchio? I cannot tell a lie. They're inside. And the dacoits kill them. So in other words, even truthfulness is dharmic, but certain times being truthful is adharmic. So this is a whole theory of ethics, which is taught in the Mahabharata of consequentialism. Because, for example, Grandfather Bhishma took a vow. Actually, it's dharmic to keep your vows, right? He took a vow to always support the king. So the king was arranging, through his son, to cheat the Pandavas, right? And ultimately to disrobe Draupadi. So Grandfather Bhishma, in order to keep his vow, which is dharmic, did something which is adharmic. He just stood by there. Even though he had the power, he was the most fierce Kshatriya, I mean, most powerful Kshatriya those days. He was Gangaputra, you know, the son of Gangadevi. He came from the heavenly planets. And so he didn't do anything about it, right? I mean, he was steaming, he was angry, but he didn't raise his arms to protect this woman. And even Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira thought, well, you gamble, it's a fair match. It wasn't fair because the dice were loaded, but he didn't understand that. So he thought, you know, we made a deal. You know, I promised that I would abide by this gambling match. I gambled my brothers, I gambled my wife, so I have to do it. So he didn't consider the consequences. And this is one of the things that's taught in the end of the Mahabharata, in the Bhishma Parva, where Grandfather Bhishma is lying on the bed of arrows. And he is taught by Krishna. Krishna basically teaches him, you know, you should have understood the consequences of your actions. Not just thinking, you know, I'm a dharmic person, I'm proud of my dharma. I am the truth teller, I am the promise keeper. Like that. Of course, in ordinary circumstances, yes, we should keep promises, we should tell the truth. But, so here, getting back to this point, so clearing the land was dharmic. But the consequences were that they were clearing too much land, and the living entities wouldn't have enough to eat because of all the trees being cleared. And they weren't thinking compassionately. The anger, when one becomes angry, one loses his compassion towards other living entities. And the king especially is supposed to consider all living entities, praja, means like his sons. So much so that he's not even supposed to distinguish between his own family members and the members of the kingdom. I mean, that's why Lord Ramchandra sends Sita Devi away, for the purpose of, the greater purpose of the kingdom. In other words, one sacrifices one's own personal happiness for the happiness of humanity or the happiness of all living entities. And of course you see this to even a greater extent in the story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about the man who had leprosy. And he was so concerned with the worms that were in his body. Can you imagine that? Like, the worm fell out and he put the worm back in. And that's compassion. I mean, if a worm ever gets on my body, what to speak of in the body, isn't it? I'm not thinking, oh, this poor worm. He's just trying to eat. He's not trying to attack me. He just wants prasad. You know, because I've been eating prasad for so many years, I guess the body is partially prasad by now. So he just wants prasad, that's all. He just has feelings like it, you know, so that requires some empathy, understanding that everybody has feelings like you and me. It's not that you're all figments of my imagination, like we talk about during the 1960s and 70s. It's just that everyone has feelings and needs just like I do. And so that's compassion. But when one's angry, when one's angry inappropriately, one loses his compassion for other living entities. Therefore, control of anger, lust, anger, greed are described in Bhagavad Gita as the gateways to hell. So one has to give these things up in order to be compassionate to other people. So how to give them up? That's a topic for another class. How to give them up is a topic for another class. For another 2 weeks of classes. So, okay, on that happy note, Om Aisha Krodi Aisha Rajadivas Om Bhava.